Plain Talk Series Number 9, Business by William W. Walter. Since using your practical method of applying Christian Science in healing the sick, I've been very successful indeed, but I have a financial problem which has not yet yielded. My husband, having seen that much greater success that I'm having with my patients since I am applying the truth according to your method, desires me to ask how to apply this practical method to his business. Or I have been trying to sell my home or farm according to your practical method as outlined in your book, but have not yet made the demonstration. Such is the tone of many letters that frequently come to me. Recently a gentleman who has a large business interest wrote, saying, "I applied your practical method of Christian Science to an ailment of long standing which did not yield to the old manner of treatment and have been very successful in destroying the claim. Why do you not get out something on business, showing the practical application of right thought to business problems? I have for years noticed that the field seems to think that every problem is handled by a different way. I have shown a patient how to overcome chronic headaches in himself, only to have him come back later and ask advice regarding some other chronic ailment with which he was suffering. It seems that the field has not the ability to adapt the right thought used in one case to fit another, and this is because they seem to think that all problems are not fundamentally alike. Having been successful as a healer through the application of right thinking, and having solved my financial problems in the same way, I shall strive in this booklet to make more plain my system of applying right thought to business problems. I lay a foundation for what I shall say later. I wish to call the reader's attention to a statement we frequently hear people make, namely, that man is in poor health, meaning thereby that he is sick. In the business world, it is not customary to say that business is sick, but that business is poor. Any business that is poor is a sick business and should be handled the same as any other claim of sickness. Mrs. Eddy said, "Man is God's idea of himself." In the first edition of Science and Health, page 222, we have Mrs. Eddy's very best explanation of the word man. She wrote, "The compound idea named man is unintelligent. It is a lifeless image and reflection of principle, or soul, which is the life, intelligence, and substance of this idea. In other words, the thing that we call body is man, and the thing or substance that animates the body is soul." With this better understanding of the word man before us, we can now see that when Mrs. Eddy said, "Man is God's idea of himself," she meant that the embodiment named man is the externalized idea of the mind concerning itself. The word body properly means embodiment. Therefore, your body is your embodiment, and you properly are not man, the embodiment, but our soul, the animating substance and cause of the visible effect of yourself, which is named man. Therefore, your body, properly understood, is your externalized idea of yourself. As students of metaphysics, we know that all disease is mental, that the manifestation of disease, which seems to be in the body, are really the external effect of sick thoughts held in the mentality. To say it plainly, your body is your thought convictions regarding yourself made visible. This being true, the condition of the body must also be your thought conclusions regarding the condition of your body. The individual erring entertains a mental sense of pain in some particular part of the body, and thus he outlines on that particular part of the body the sensation of pain held in the mentality. The individual has a sound conviction that he is strong and well, shows this forth in the externalized condition as a strong and so-called healthy body. Health is a sense. It is a mental state, not a bodily state. The mentality always stands as cause, and the effect or condition we see in the external universe is the visible effect of this invisible cause. This is why when we think thoughts of sickness with the sense that we are sick, the obedient body, like a faithful mirror, reflects back these sick thoughts, and then we erringly think the sickness is in or of the body. A sick body or embodiment is evolved through sick thoughts, believed, the individual thinking and believing that he is sick and that the sickness is in the body. In the same way, a man's business is the externalized effect following his thought about his business. If the individual businessman gets to thinking that his business is poor and feels convinced of it, he is actually creating that condition for his business, not knowing that a good or poor business is the result of good or poor thoughts about the business. The businessman, who unwittingly gets to thinking of his business as being poor, views the condition of his business and lays this poor condition to many things which are not causative at all. On page 114, current edition of Science and Health, there is a marginal heading entitled Causation Mental. The paragraph attached to this heading reads, "Christian Science explains all cause and effect is mental, not physical." This statement is very plain indeed and means, when rightly understood, that mentality is the cause of all, and because of this, the externalized effect is also meant, though mistakenly called material. The metaphysician has an actual understanding, knows that mind and spirit are one and the same, and also the mental and spiritual are one and the same. Those who have not this understanding try to differentiate between mental and spiritual, erringly believing that spiritual power or spiritual causation is something other than mental power or mental causation. With this mistaken sense of metaphysics, they have no right conception whatever of what the cause of all really is, and therefore do not locate the cause of all their trouble as well as their blessings in their own mentality. But if Mrs. Eddy's statement that Christian Science explains all cause and effect is mental is correct, the understanding of this simplifies matters greatly. The poor business of the businessman is caused by the mentality, the mental cause of all, of the businessman. The only way in which the mentality can act is through its thoughts, and so the poor business is positive, visible proof that the businessman or merchant has been thinking thoughts of poor business and believing it. As a sick man is experiencing his sick thoughts, so also the businessman is experiencing a sick business or poor business because of his poor thoughts about his business. Therefore, the general remedy is a plain. The sick man who wishes to get well must cease his sick thinking about himself, and the businessman who desires to heal his sick business must cease thinking and believing sick thoughts about his business. The sick who know not that thought is causative and the only cause frequently state that they have never given a thought to the illness which they are experiencing, but this is another erring belief of their own. While it is true that the sick individual may not have thought of any specific illness, yet he did allow himself to think that he was not feeling well or that some parts of his body were not functioning correctly. In other words, though not thinking of the specific disease from which he is suffering, yet he thought of all the things that went to make up that specific illness. Usually when we are not feeling well, we do not name the illness at once, but either guess at its name ourselves or call in a doctor who gives the ailment a name. Having accepted the doctor's verdict in regard to the name, the mentality works to externalize all the symptoms and conditions that go to make up that name. In like manner, the businessman may not specifically have thought of poor business, but allowed the belief to creep into his thoughts because of certain things or conditions. Not knowing the mental nature of all cause, the businessman accepts without question the business belief of the business world. When the general conditions are such that the businessman believes that conditions are not advantageous for a good business, he begins to think more or less of the general rumor about poor business, and in this way accepts the general belief unwittingly. If he is employing help, the businessman makes matters worse by telling his fears of poor business to his employees, and thus the mental cause is enlarged, and the poor business that is externalized is in exact proportion to the thoughts of those who are thinking poorly about the business. If such general conditions were really cause, then all business would be affected alike, yet careful reasoning shows us that at no time is everyone's business poor. The present so-called business depression because of the war conditions that went before has mentally inculcated many businessmen with the fear thought of poor business. Still, not all have been affected by this universal belief. A quiet investigation by anyone will reveal that there are some businessmen today enjoying as lucrative a business as at any time when conditions were supposed to be ideal. These instances of good business in so-called bad times positively refute the thought that present conditions are the cause of present depression. It is the present mental state regarding conditions that is the actual cause of the business depression, as can be seen from the fact that those who are not impressed by the general belief of poor business are still enjoying as good a business as formerly. We find the same condition in regard to so-called sick people that we do in regard to poor business. For instance, when there is a universal belief that a certain disease is sweeping through the country, the mentalities of many are affected by this universal belief, and they catch or take the disease which they believe is quite prevalent at the time. This epidemic of sickness could well be called a time of health depression, to correspond with the businessman's belief in business depression. The individuals who have no fear of the sick epidemic and pay no special attention to it do not experience it. The same as the businessman who does not pay any attention to the belief of hard times does not experience hard times or poor business. The remedy for both the sick individual and the poor business thought of the businessman is identically the same, namely, much repetition of right thought to the eradication and exclusion of the erring belief, be it sick body or sick business, from the mentality and thinking of the sick individual or businessman. It is an unalterable law of mind that, out of mind, out of body, effect. Therefore, with no thought of poor business in the merchant's mentality, there could be no embodiment of poor business exhibited in his business experience. Now we come to the man or individual, the greater part of whose vocabulary is bound up in the word but. This individual will say, but it is different in my business. The people have no money, they are out of work, etc. And so it seems to this person. Using this individual's own vocabulary, I say, but did you ever stop to think that there are still thousands and thousands of dollars worth of business done in your city daily? Someone gets this business and someone has money to buy. Then why not try to have them come to you for the things which they desire to buy? We find in the mercantile world during the present depression, and also among the manufacturers, that there are some who are enjoying what we call good business. You may lay their successful business to many different causes, but until you lay it to the mental state of the individuals who are managing this good business, you have not cited the cause aright. The mere fact that one manufacturer of a certain line can continue to have good business proves that there is good business to be had, but not by the businessman who does not think so and sits still and quietly waits for the storm to blow over. Business conditions are mental conditions, and if you are one of those who are in a waiting mental condition, you are making your business wait for success. The first thing necessary is for you to work for a changed mental state. You can acquire this mental change through a process of continuous right thinking. The sick individual who wishes to produce self-healing for himself must first of all absolutely ignore the seeming sick condition as being real and make the effort to constantly think of himself as absolutely well. Or if he cannot take this ultimate position, he can start on the road to health by claiming and thinking constantly that he is getting better. This thinking of better thought about himself will be reflected in the bettered condition experienced by him. The merchant who desires a better business than he is now experiencing must cease thinking of thoughts of poor business, which are the cause of his present poor business, and begin at once to think he is enjoying a good business, or at least that his business is getting better. In this mental work of changing the mentality from a condition in which it is thinking constantly of poor business or poor health to a state in which the thoughts of good health and good business predominates, it is well to remember that, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. This statement has much more in it than appears on the surface. Most of us at first get the erring sense from it that, as a man thinketh, so is he, but this is not true. The statement reads, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. The word heart means to actually believe or understand. Therefore, the method of producing a better business is not merely the thinking of better business, but of convincing oneself mentally, through the thinking that business is better. There is nothing to hinder any businessman or woman from starting in today and actually creating for themselves a better business. As Mrs. Eddy points out in the current edition of Science and Health, page 248, we are all sculptors, working in various forms, molding and chiseling thought. It would have been plainer had she said, we are all creators, working in various forms, things, and conditions, creating them with our thoughts about them. Mrs. Eddy's next statement is, what is the model before mortal mind? Plainly stated, this means, what is the model that you are holding before your mind? Next, she states, is it imperfection, joy, sorrow, sin, or suffering? Have you accepted the mortal model? Are you reproducing it? Fitting this statement to the businessman's case, I shall ask him, is the model that you are holding before your mentality one of poor business? Have you accepted the general belief of poor business as your model? Have you reproduced it in your business as poor business? Then who is to blame for the poor business that you are experiencing? This lesson should teach those who have more than a smattering of metaphysical understanding that one of the first things necessary to a bettered business condition is to change their mind model. That is, their belief about poor business to the better model of good business, and also to pay no attention to the model exhibited by the general human belief regarding poor business. Otherwise, having accepted the general belief of poor business, they will continue to hold this model before their mentality and think thoughts in conformity with this erring model, and in due time will reproduce these very wrong conditions in their business experience. Start today on the road to better business by holding constantly in your mentality the sense that your business is becoming better. Think it, feel it, act it out. Have faith in your right thought power hope, that is, expect better business and love, that is, feel certain that you will receive the results following your right thought. Using this method persistently, you positively will, with your right thought, create a better business condition for yourself. This is not a mysterious work where once we take into consideration that right thought is cause or the activity of the creative force. Mind, and that both the scriptures and the metaphysics teach, that there is nothing impossible to God or mind. This means that there is nothing whatsoever that the mentality, through right thought, cannot create or sculpt or image forth. A number of years ago, I read many articles in a newspaper purporting to have been written by some of the most successful men in America. In these articles, these various businessmen of much wealth attempted to tell what was the cause of their great success. The causes ascribed were a little different in each case, but one and all agreed that stick-to-itiveness was one of their vital conditions which made their success. Not one of these men recognized or understood the real cause back of the work accomplished. The mental quality of persistence resident in their mentalities, coupled with the mental model of success held constantly before their gaze, would not allow them to think thoughts of failure, at least not for any length of time. Therefore, the preponderating thoughts in their mentalities were thoughts of success, and believing with all their thoughts in their ability to make success, they thought right, felt right, and acted right toward their various occupations. With such a power constantly acting in the creative state and directed toward the thought of success, the effect or visible embodiment of such thoughts was the externalization or expression of the wonderful success which these men obtained in their various lines. The individual who is habitually sick, not knowing the acquired and creative power of thought, has unwittingly acquired the habit of thinking of himself as thick and his body as imperfect. The individual who has gained metaphysical understanding knows that if he will make the constant and persistent effort to acquire the habit of daily thinking of himself as well and happy, that he will experience in his daily life habitual health and happiness, which is the natural and normal. The individual who understands that mentality is cause can acquire the habit of thinking of himself as successful, and as his business has always been good, and his habitual experience will then be habitual success and constant good business. There is nothing mysterious about this. It is merely the working out of mental law. The mystery that seemed attached to it was that we were ignorant of the mental cause of all, and therefore laid our ill or good success to any and everything or condition except the right thing or condition. In the old way, we were working blindly. Those who were so mentally constituted that persistence and determination were strong within their mentalities succeeded because of those qualities, not wittingly, but because the law of mind is such that the thought conclusions and conviction of the mentality are externalized as so-called things and conditions. If there is any one part of the scriptural teaching that stands out more prominently than the rest, it is the effort made by the early metaphysicians in trying to acquaint us with the facts of life, which is that there is but one God. Christianity has accepted the thought of one God, and all of the various religions have embodied this thought in their tenets. But their sense of what was meant by the statement that there is but one God was entirely at variance with the understanding of these early metaphysicians who made the statement. Abraham gave the name the Almighty to God, and from that time down to the present time, humanity in general has had an entirely erroneous conception of what was meant by the term God. When Abraham called the creative force the Almighty, he meant that there is only one might or power in the universe. A thing to be almighty would necessarily be the all-cause, for being the all-might, there could be nothing else that had force or power. Daily experience shows it that the so-called matter is inert and senseless. Therefore, Abraham could not have meant so-called matter or the objective universe when he spoke of the Almighty. Coming down to the time of Paul, we find him saying, "Let that mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus." Mrs. Eddy, commenting on this statement of Paul, said in substance that the mind that was in Christ Jesus must surely have been the divine mind. Here, then, we have another name or term for the Almighty. It was the mind in Jesus, or rather the mind of Jesus, which was the Almighty all-might power that enabled him to do the things that others considered miracles. To him who understand the workings of mentality, they were not miracles but the externalized effects following his right thought conviction regarding the mental problems brought to his attention. We next have Mrs. Eddy stating plainly that mind is God, meaning that mind is the all-might or almighty that Abraham spoke about. What this mind was and where it was plainly stated by Miss Eddy in the first edition of Science and Health, which is the only edition of her works that she speaks of as containing the complete statement of Christian Science, the science of life. Her reason for later hiding these plain statements of truth under a mass of words is yet to be uncovered. Some think that she veiled the plain statements of truth for the same reason the scriptural writers veil their statements, namely that these plain statements were shocking to the unprepared mentality and might be misused and misunderstood. I feel it was a great mistake on her part to have, in this progressive age, veiled the truth about life. Following out Mrs. Eddy's teaching that mind is God, the student is not by any means clear on what she means when she states that mind is God. Most of her teachers and practitioners with whom I have discussed this matter have come to the conclusion that Mrs. Eddy, in speaking of the divine mind, meant a mind outside and foreign to the mentality of the individual. I claim that this is an error on their part, because in the third edition of Science and Health, we find Mrs. Eddy's statement as follows. Soul and body are God and man, the soul part of the individual being God or divine mind, and the embodiment being man. When the disciple Philip asked Jesus to show him the Father, Jesus answered, He who hath seen me hath seen the Father, and also I and the Father are one. With the greater light that Mrs. Eddy in her early editions gave us of God and man, by showing that soul and body are God and man, we can understand the answer of Jesus to Philip. The soul being the Father and man being the embodiment, the Master's statement was clear when he said, He who hath seen me, or my embodiment, hath seen the Father, that is, has seen all that can be seen of the Father. Having shown that the Almighty of Abraham's time is the divine mind of our time, the next step in mental enlightenment is to show who or what this divine mind is, and also of what is all might consist. On page 252, miscellaneous writing, Mrs. Eddy wrote, Christian Science classifies thought thus. Right thoughts are reality and power. Wrong thoughts are unreality and powerless, possessing the nature of dreams. Good thoughts are potent, evil thoughts are impotent, and they should appear thus. Continuing this category, we learn that sick thoughts are unreality and weakness, while healthy thoughts are reality and strength. If Mrs. Eddy was correct when she wrote that right thoughts are reality and power, it does not make much further reasoning to clearly understand that the Almighty, or All Might that Abraham referred to, was right thought. For according to Mrs. Eddy, they are reality and power. She also states that God is good and explains that in the Saxon language, good is only another term for God. Therefore, if good is God, then good thoughts are God's thoughts, and as right thoughts and good thoughts are one and the same, we now can understand that the universal cause of all good and all reality is right thought. This also clearly shows why Mrs. Eddy states that all cause is mental. Now, to apply this better understanding of God to our business problems, we need merely remember that good and right thoughts are power or the Almighty. That is, right thoughts are the universal cause of all reality, or of every good and right thing and conditions which appear or which we experience. Applying this to our business problems, we can readily see why it is that good thoughts about our business should create or be externalized as good business. When striving to apply good or right thought to our business problems, we must remember that even though thought is creative, it takes good or right thought to create right things and good conditions. To give you a concrete illustration so that you may understand the unseen working of thought, suppose we take the building of a brick house as an example. If we lay but one brick per day, it is going to take a long time to finish the house. If we lay two bricks per day, it will take only half as long. If we keep constantly laying the brick all day long, our brick house will be finished in a very short time. It is just so with right or constructive thought pertaining to our business. If we spend just a few minutes each day in thinking good thoughts, it will take a long time to build a good business. Whereas if we keep thinking continually all day long that the business is improving, it will not be very long before we have an external evidence of a better business. Again, if we start to lay our brick house and after spending a half hour in carefully laying the brick, we would then for the next half hour pull down the brick we had placed in their proper place, we would at the end of the first hour be just where we began to work. And if we continued this intermittent building and tearing down every hour of the day, at the end of the day's work we would find ourselves just where we had begun. So also in the building up of our business, if we spend 10 minutes or a half hour in thinking right thoughts about the business, and then spend the next 10 minutes or a half hour in thinking the reverse about our business, we will have made no progress whatsoever. And if we think more poor business than good business, the business will continue from bad to worse. And if this is kept on, this wrong thinking will end in the death of the business, the same as the sick thinking ends in the so-called death of the individual. The Almighty power is right thought, and right thought being the all power, there is no other power in reality. The power that wrong thought seems to have is but the seeming, that is, wrong thought is erring thought. Erring thought is erring supposition is blind belief, and blind belief is mental darkness or Satan. As right thought externalizes right and real conditions, so also on the reverse side, wrong thought or belief externalizes belief conditions, not real conditions. The trouble is that humankind has never been made aware of the fact that evil conditions are but belief conditions. they being the externalization of belief or seeming, in contradistinction to understanding or reality. Right is always might, and therefore, when right thought is brought into activity, the seeming is destroyed, leaving nothing in evidence but right or reality. One of the most frequent erring beliefs that the average businessman meets with is the belief of competition. Many good businessmen have come to me stating that for a number of years they had enjoyed a good steady business, but that at a certain time a competitor located next door, perchance across the street, and since that time the business had been going from bad to worse until bankruptcy stared them in the face. Let us analyze the mental condition surrounding this problem. This businessman, before competition moved into his field, was certain that his business would be successful, therefore had no erring thoughts to the contrary. As soon as the competitor moved into his field, his thoughts toward his business changed, and he began to fear that his competitor might get his trade, and perhaps mentally sensed many of his customers are going to his competitor. Whenever he saw one of his old reliable customers go into the new store, he would have the fear that he had lost that customer, or perhaps would soon lose her. And with this belief ever at work, this man was virtually, with his fear, mentally driving his customers away from himself. On the other hand, when the competitor moved in there, he expected some trade, of course, but as he gradually saw the customer of the other merchant coming to him, it was only natural for him to get into the mental state where he was constantly thinking all day long that he was getting all the business away from the older merchant. And as thought is causative, we find the business of the new store building up and the business of the old store going down. I have outlined this to many merchants and enlightened them to the point where they would get a change of thought, and they would begin to again think rightfully about their own business, with the result that in due time, the poor business again became a good business. The merchant who recognizes the competitor as a competitor is making a great mental mistake. In fact and in truth, there is a business enough for all, and if all would think right, each would have sufficient business to have a good business of his own. The merchant should not entertain the thought that he has any competitors, but should hold the thought that he has goods to sell and that plenty of good people are coming to him to buy these good goods. It is not necessary to carry that sense that you wish another merchant's customers, because that would be mental dishonesty. An honest person only wants his own customers. He has to right to think that the number of customers is plentiful and that they will be satisfied with the goods he is selling. If the merchant will send out broadcast his thought, "Come, all you good people who desire to buy goods that I have for sale, and I will give you good treatment and good value in all my dealing with you." And then if the merchant will live up to the goodness that he expresses in the thought sent out, he will build for himself a good business and plenty of good customers. If any merchants will strive to use mental means or make use of the mental powers which the idea of defrauding, he may rest assured that God is not mocked, that is, the almighty power of right cannot be abrogated. He who attempts to win riches in this way will find that in the end he will merely have made a shipwreck of himself and his business through his evil efforts. No matter what the enterprise may be, if the enterprise be good or right, those interested have the right to think success for the enterprise, and the more they think or feel the sense of success for the enterprise, the greater will be the success. From what has been said of the power of right thought, some might think that according to this idea, they could locate a millinery store in a deserted wilderness and still make it a success with their thoughts. There is another name for the almighty power which is not frequently used. That name is intelligence. Intelligence being God, and the devil being the suppositional opposite of God, that suppositional opposite would be ignorance. Right thought is intelligent thought, so also is good thought intelligent thought. He who would locate a millinery store in the wilderness would not be acting and thinking in accord with the power of intelligence. Therefore, his location there would have been at the erring suggestion of ignorance, and the outcome of such erroneous thinking would be in full accord with the error of his thought. It is certain that there is nothing impossible to God or right mind, but humanity's understanding of the Almighty of mind is very limited, and because of this limited understanding they can use but a limited number and amount of the all-power. Had we an absolute and full understanding of the allness of the right thought, no right thing would then be impossible to us. The law of progression is one of the first and foremost laws of life, God, and in the gaining of the understanding of life itself. We gain this understanding progressively. As we can use only as much of mathematics as we understand, so in like manner, we can use only the amount of the almighty power that we understand. I have many inquirers ask me how it is possible to determine which one of two things or two courses is the right one to choose. Many times I am asked the question, shall I continue in my present vocation, or shall I turn all my time and attention to the healing field? Occasionally, the inquirer wishes to know whether it would be best for him to enter the mechanical field or the business world, stating that he has a choice of either one but does not know which to choose. To all such questions, there is one and the same answer, which is, choose the one you like best and then drive that one to success with your right thought. The ultimate success of any business or pursuit does not lie in the choice, but lies entirely in the amount of right thought applied to the proposition after the choice has been made. Right thought is applicable to all walks of life. The mechanic can create progression for himself by thinking thoughts of progress and advancement, so also can the clerk in the store. The farmhand on the farm can think right thoughts about advancement and progress, and if he will feel the thoughts he thinks and live up to his highest and best thought, he will find that there is no power in the universe to retard his progress and advancement. The agriculturalist can use it in his work. He can keep thinking right thoughts about his crops and about the surrounding conditions that make for success. The breeder of fine cattle can think right thoughts about his cattle and thus continue to gain finer results. There is no right thought or thing or condition where right thoughts cannot be applied and still greater success obtained. If you are already successful, you can become more so. If you are well, you can become still healthier and stronger. If you are happy, you can become still happier by a right and constant application of right thinking. This is not a mere unproved theory, but everything stated has been proven by actual results obtained, either in my own business problems or for the many hundreds of businessmen who, in the past 15 years, have applied to me for mental help. I have used business thoughts under test conditions to prove to myself the power of right thought on business. I have proved it, not a possible task, to select any one of my books, and through treating it with right thought, make it outsell all the rest. During the time that I was testing this, I would select first one and then another of the books to prove that their sale did respond to my right thought about their sale. One of the problems that seems to baffle many students of metaphysics is the sale of some property or land in which they wish to dispose. This one general error is that the student who is attempting to bring about the sale starts in by saying, "I desire to sell my home." When the student claims the property by saying, "my home," the mental action set up by his claim is that of the mind holding to the property by claiming it. To sell a piece of property mentally, he should first release or mental claim to it. Just as the individual who is sick should mentally claim that he is well and knows it, so also in like manner, the individual who wishes to sell a piece of property should say, "This piece of property is sold and I know it, and the new owner will come to me at once and pay me a fair price for it." Mentally let loose of the ownership and mentality, see the entire transaction closed and finished, and when you have gained a feeling of conviction in the matter, you find this thought externalized and the demonstration completed. This is not contrary to the advice of Jesus, as can be seen in the statement accredited to him where he said, "Whatsoever ye desire, believe that ye receive," which statement, carried to its ultimate, and as it appears in some writings, is, "Whatsoever ye desire, believe that ye already have, and ye shall receive it." Just as every seed and plant is made mentally before it is placed in the ground, so also every transaction is made and must be finished in mind before it can be externalized as a finished transaction. Therefore, to close up our little plain talk on business, I wish you always to bear in mind that the good or bad condition exhibited by your business is made in mind before it can appear in the external universe. Therefore, if you wish good business continuously, you must keep creating good business continuously through constant right thinking. You may perhaps not succeed in the first day, week, or month, but this will not be because the method is at fault, but rather because your understanding of the metaphysical is so limited that the power of your thought is also very limited. If you desire to enhance the power of your thought so that you can think or speak with greater authority, I would advise you to get my book, The Sickle, which will give you still further enlightenment on the power of the mentality and its creative right thought. That the statement that your mentality has the power to create and that you are the lawmaker who decides whether you shall create success or failure is according to Mrs. Eddy's teaching. You can discover for yourself by a careful study of the following statement taken from page 258, line 12, miscellaneous writing, where she wrote, "In the spiritual genesis of creation, all law was vested in the lawgiver, who was a law to himself. In divine science, God is one and all, and governing himself, he governs the universe. This is a law of creation. You are the lawgiver or lawmaker as far as self is concerned. Therefore, when you learn how to govern your thought, then you can govern yourself and your business." End of booklet.